So imagine that you intend to climb a towering mountain. The path is steep and narrow. The weather is changeable. The air is thin. You will require all of your fortitude to weather the elements, to climb all the way to the summit. It would be much easier to stay below, but at the top of the mountain one can see to the ends of the earth. One stands there above the clouds. One is lifted up into the sky itself, and one desires that altitude, if only once in one's life, to breathe the pure air and see the far horizon in all directions. Now, to fulfill this intention requires forethought. One must plan well. One must follow the guidance of a mountaineer who has ascended the same peak, and be sure to follow the pathway that one's guide has reconnoitered. There are stages in the ascent. But already at the beginning, one has to take great care as to how one equips oneself. Now, in our day-to-day lives, we tend to accumulate all kinds of things. Nice things, not so nice things, all kinds of objects pile up, and one feels a certain attachment even to the things that are not so nice, strangely enough. So it's hard to do without any of it. And then more and more one finds oneself having to make all kinds of arrangements just to keep these things and provide space for them. And you become the curator of your own museum. And in this way, a certain degree of freedom is lost. So how would it be to disburden oneself of that load? And in fact, if one intends to climb the mountain, it's mandatory to lighten one's load. And then the question is, what is useful? What do I need? What is helpful in the ascent? Certain things that you will need. A lightweight but weatherproof tent, that's important. The means of starting a fire. These basic items of equipment are crucial. But on the other hand, there are those things that would just weigh you down pointlessly. So already at the beginning, of a retreat, and certainly at the inception of any serious spiritual process, one has to make this discrimination. And that is, in fact, what the first stage of the alchemical process entails. It involves giving over what is already outworn, outdated, no longer relevant or useful. Filtration, filtering out the dross, the impurities, so much that belongs to that category which we might well call impurities. And what is an impurity? It is something that doesn't belong. It's something extraneous, something that is not intrinsic to the essence of an intention. So that which accrues in the course of time through conditioning, the way in which we are impressed by impressions that we cannot unsee, as it were, that become so imprinted as to compel the movement of thought along grooves that prove ultimately unconstructive. You find yourself thinking the same old fatiguing thoughts again and again, the same old carking cares, the same woes and worries just repeat themselves, and there's no felicity in it. It goes nowhere. It's a closed loop. So there's a need to jettison so much of this burden, and to do so already at the beginning. Otherwise, one can't go any further. So there's a need to descend into the mud, really. Moshit says, to reach the water of life, you must pass through much mud. You have to dig deep down to where the water is. You have to dig through the mud. And so it's inevitable in a process like this that we'll come face to face with parts of what we have come to call ourselves that we don't like, aspects of our life that that are incongruous. And it was perhaps convenient for a time just to repress all awareness of these incongruities and try to sustain a condition of euphoria, distracting ourselves with things that are sufficiently pleasant as to overshadow the really destructive habits of our own minds. And that that impulse towards self-distraction becomes very compulsive and leads one continuously further and further out toward the exterior and away from what's right here, right now, within us. And sooner or later, that strategy is going to collapse. We know that. So to preempt the inevitable crisis, it's important to call a halt right now to these manufactured illusions and look carefully at one's life and acknowledge what isn't working externally and internally, and the external problems are generally reflections of internal inconsistencies. And so one begins by resolving to renounce that which is unhelpful and potentially destructive. And at a later stage, that the process of discernment becomes finer and subtler. But at the beginning, it's just pulling out the stones from underground. When you're going to plant a garden, you have to exhume the big obstructions. So it's a matter of reaching down, finding the obstructions and moving them to the side. Now, the actual work of sustaining that clarity that will allow for the prevention of the renewed incursion of obstructions, that's a further work. But the first work here is to clear the ground and make some space and remove the obstacles. And that's got to be accompanied by a spirit of resolution. And that comes with the sentiment that sentiment of confidence that Murshid underscores when he says, just because you've walked in the mud or just because you've wandered off into the mud doesn't mean you must continue to walk there. Step out of the mud back onto the path. But sometimes, on the contrary, the inclination is to argue, oh, well, now I've come this far, there's not hope for me anymore, I'm already down here in the mud, and there's nothing for it. But if that's so, well, then there's no point our gathering here like this, there's no point venturing on the path. If you're here, if we're embarking on this, is because one perceives the real possibility to steer a new course, to return to that path which was the soul's chosen path in the time before time. So it begins with an act of renunciation, which is always associated also with repentance. Because so much of our wayward habits are linked one way or another with shame and the sense of guilt. It's a heavy burden that that one carries, and a burden that all too often is denied and repressed. But the impression of wrongdoing is there. Every soul, having come from a place of pristine purity, has descended into a world of convolution and confusion and misalignment, and we've entered bloodstreams through the very act of our birth. We've entered bloodstreams that carry old memories of woundedness and of end of the remembrance of wrongdoing. And so already, as we descend through the spheres, this impression asserts itself, and yet it is never rationally clarified. It's always just under the surface of the consciousness. But we're aware of having been done wrong by. We carry the legacy of harm inflicted upon us, and the sting of it, and also the recollection of our own errors, and not only the fact of having chosen badly, but the discernment of the consequences that others have suffered and one has oneself suffered. And so there is this this load, and in fact you can't find the beginning of it if you trace it back through ancestors, through all of the injustices of history, of slavery and war and oppression and exploitation. It's part of the human condition. Our soul has partaken of it. And so this conditioning is such that it can easily prevent all advancement on the path, because one identifies so thoroughly with a fallen state that there's no apparent egress. So we have to already at the beginning account for that and begin to come to terms with it. And the only means of coming to terms with it is through recognizing the reality of the antidote, which is in fact very real and very effective, and that is a certain pitch of emotion, which may be named love in its purest form, and which culminates in that mode of knowing and being that we call magnanimity and forgiveness and grace. And the recognition that that's the possibility of the flowering of that seed in human nature is possible only because inherent in the universe itself, in the very essence of everything, that spirit flows, that supernatural mercy. So there's a need to acknowledge it and make it one's pole star, be guided by it, begin the retreat in the hope of it, even with the promise of its fulfillment, and then attend to everything by reference to it. So then we look out over the broken landscape of human history and witness the the degradation and we're conscious of wrongdoing, humans brutalizing other humans and brutalizing animals, all manner of beings. And there is despair, there is profound pity, but beyond pity, compassion. Compassion for the victims of violence and exploitation, and even compassion for the perpetrators who take upon themselves the very thing they perpetrate, and the knowledge that the perpetrators are at root souls, pure souls who have descended from the divine source, and that all of this mayhem and suffering is a distortion in the fabric of reality, which is not permanent. All distortions must at last be resolved again into harmony. All minds must at last be lifted up into clarity. All wounds healed. In this light, one is at once vividly present to sufferers everywhere, and at the same time capable of giving one's mind and heart over to that existential ground of compassion, of mercy, in which there is sanctuary for all. All is redeemable. As it is said in the Quran Sharif, my mercy embraces everything. Right down into the deepest hell, there is no place, no thing that exists outside of the divine compassion, which opens a pathway that must at last lead to perfect peace. One thinks back over the hardships one has suffered, and perhaps worse than hardships, the inflicted wounds. Now, forgiveness can never be forced. You cannot even force yourself to produce it. But it is good from time to time to ask yourself again, am I ready now to forgive, to offer the whole matter up to the divine discretion, no longer to be a judge regarding it, to give over judgment and just to surrender the past up to Providence and to submit a prayer even for the one who has done you harm. It cannot be forced, but one day it may come, maybe today. When you decide to break the causal chain, no longer to carry a grievance which binds you so adhesively to the impression from the past, rather to dissolve the impression by this gesture of kind of magnanimity of spirit, which is simply an acting upon the magnanimity of the Divine Spirit, which pervades everything with mercy. And it's because of that mercy, because of that forgiveness so freely given, that beings are at last able to evolve out of the confines of their destructive distortions. Can a prayer that one offers up for one that has given you offense, can it help to liberate him or her? Perhaps. Certainly it will help to liberate you. Because in this highest pitch of emotion, this unconditioned and unconditional purity of love, there's so much freedom, this freedom that just abrogates all of the narrow straits that constrict the heart, that abrogates the grudges and all that is attendant upon grudges, which is to say the expectation of some compensation, and in the absence of that compensation, the feeling of insufficiency, incompleteness, all of that dissatisfaction can be dissolved and calmed and quieted through this access to a very pure wave of divine emotion. So we resolve to begin our ascent with this attitude of repentance, forgiveness to those who have done wrong, but now also this, forgiveness toward oneself. Because that is perhaps even more necessary, given how deeply ingrained is one's shame for the mistakes one has made. If others may be rightly accorded that mercy which is divinely ordained for all, then why should one be exempt from it oneself? It is for all, it is for you. Not even despite one's wrongdoing, but even because of one's wrongdoing. That wrongdoing attracts the forgiveness of that divine mercy which seeks out the distortion in the fabric of the universe and pours upon it a healing grace for whoever is willing to receive it. That willingness is what is asked of us. The grace is there, the dispensation of merciful forgiveness is there, but on our side, the capacity to accept that grace, to digest it and accord it all due seriousness. This divine mercy is not a fable that belongs to the realm of fairy tales. It's right here in your nervous system, if you will accede to it. And thereby advance on the path that is for the fulfillment of your life's purpose. Refusing to accord seriousness to this dispensation of mercy means that one freezes oneself in a state determined by the past. One is no longer responsive to the infusion of the divine action upon your being breath by breath. You're lost in old formations. So there's an urgency now to finally letting go of these patterns arising from wounds and fears, to forgive others, to forgive yourself, to lay down the load and walk forward now with full confidence and faith in the real. So in this spirit, do that work of unwinding, of extricating the tangled cords and threads, unwind them, loosen the knots, and we'll recite Istaghfirullah, invoking the divine forgiveness. Astaghfirullah, 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 astaghfirullah. Astaghfirullah, 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 So watching your breath, watching the breath come in and go out. Now, lift your hands like this so that your right hand, the middle finger of the right hand is on touching your right nostril. And then the thumb of your left hand is on your left nostril. And the thumb of your right hand is under your chin. When you breathe in, just through the left nostril, and then when you've inhaled fully, hold your breath, close both nostrils, and then when you breathe out through your right nostril. So hold your breath for the duration of two times the duration of your inhaled breath. So like hold three, inhale three beats, hold six, exhale three, like that. So just three times like that. Inhale through the left nostril, hold, but don't hold too long. Don't strain yourself. Just hold, and then exhale. And there should be no strain on the exhalation. Don't extend yourself too long. Just lightly inhale, hold double, exhale for the same duration as the inhalation, from left to right, that way three times. Okay, now do the opposite. Inhale through the right nostril, hold, and exhale through the left nostril, keeping up the same rhythm. 3, 6, 3. Three times. Now, through both nostrils, both together, inhale, close them both, hold, and exhale through both three times. Then you can lower your hands and you see how the body is divided in two halves, and the two nostrils are opposite poles. Left is lunar and the right is solar. And by breathing in through one and out the other, and then the reverse, one is toggling back and forth and enhancing the dynamism of the polarity. Now, the next step is to portray time as an arrow that goes from left to right. So identify the past with the left side and the future with the right side. And the present is right in the middle. In our daily lives, we frequently make reference to the past and also to the future, which is to say that concepts of both past and future live strongly in us. So, in a moment, we're going to breathe alternatingly again. But this time we will contemplate time. First of all, when you inhale through the left nostril, think of the past, your life story until now, or the events that have led up to this moment, and particularly pivotal events. Then pause and hold your breath. And when you hold your breath, you recognize how the present moment has the capacity to transform the past. There's a saying among the Sufis, time is a cutting sword, the instant of time, the waqt, is a cutting sword. So see how the activation of forgiveness in this present moment alters the landscape of the past. And its compulsive force is redirected. And if it were not for that, the possibility of such a recreation of the past, a re-channeling of its energies, then we would all be locked into prisons from which there is no escape. But the compulsive conditioning of the past is answerable to our intention in the present moment. So you feel that when you hold your breath, how the past is redeemable through the renewal of your intention. And then when you exhale through the right nostril, then you turn toward the future and see how the future itself is liberated by the liberation of the past. So long as the present moment did not exert its transforming influence, the past is doomed to be replicated. You're locked into the implications of what came before. So see now how the future opens up, a horizon of possibility opens up as a result of your clearing of what is inherited from the past. How the future need not be constrained in accordance with the mere rule of cause and effect. Now we reverse direction and inhale through the right nostril. And as you do so, see how one has been, just as one has carried in one's mind a very fixed notion of the past that brings with it a sense of despair and helplessness, see how one has a tendency to think likewise about the future, to give in to the hopelessness of a fixed view, the assumption that a certain outcome is inevitable. So this ominous projection of an inescapable future. You just notice that. Notice the way your mind keeps churning out projections of what is going to happen. And just recognize these as projections. And then when you pause in between, when you pause, hold your breath, then liberate yourself from the necessity of what you anticipate. Recognize the limitlessness of the divine creativity and how all through your life you have been surprised by the flowering of new unexpected possibilities. So free yourself up in the present moment to face a future as yet undetermined, and to accept with peace of mind and confidence the confrontation of your life with a future that is pure possibility. And then, when you exhale through the left nostril, we're going back to the past. Now see subtly how even your construction of the past has been constrained by your fears about the future, which means that your fears about the future lead you to look back and accuse perhaps those who have set you on a course that seems now inevitable. No, all of that recrimination is eased now by the recognition that the future itself is to be realized, and therefore the past can be freed of its culpability for some feared future. In this way, both past and future are liberated from the imposition of constricting judgments, and the present moment unfurls and opens up as a zone of great possibility. Then you inhale through both nostrils and see how both past and future tend to be continuously reified by habits of mind. Hold your breath and deconstruct the mind in the splendor of the great totality, which is brimming with possibilities. And then as you exhale, feel the descent through you of the divine will. So these are the instructions now, each at your own pace. It will be we can do now 5 breaths in each direction. 5 inhaling, holding, exhaling right. 5 inhaling right, holding, exhaling left. And then 5 through both nostrils, holding and exhaling. Remember, the left represents the past, the right the future, and the middle is the present moment. So each at your own pace now, and don't strain and don't hurry yourself. Just find the natural rhythm. In the remaining moments, just relax and let's listen to the miserere. O Thou, the sustainer of our bodies, hearts, and souls, bless all that we receive